But still Pausanias held back his warriors. Only once the approval of Artemis for the great enterprise of combat ahead of them had been clearly discerned in a blood sacrifice could he give the order to advance. And the goddess, no matter how many goats were slaughtered in her honour, refused to grant the Greeks her blessing. At last, in despair, Pausanias raised a prayer directly to the heavens, and a moment later the victims, when they were sacrificed, promised success at last. Just as well. For even as Pausanias was ordering the phalanx to advance, the Tegeans had already begun running towards the Persian lines, and a single Spartan with them. Of the Tegeans, who lacked the authentic Lycurgan discipline, such intemperance might perhaps have been expected, but not of Aristodemus, that graduate of the Agoge. And yet, even though he could hardly be honoured for breaking from his place in the Spartan shield wall, for throwing himself single-handed upon the barbarians, for killing and being killed in a frenzy so berserk as to be barely Greek, he had nevertheless, his messmates agreed later, redeemed his name. Indeed, his courage would long be remembered by the men of other cities as something truly exceptional. To that extent, at least, it could be reckoned that Aristodemus had died a Spartan. All the same, true glory in Sparta went to those who fought not in the cause of their own selfish honour, but as links in a single machine, and great glory, that terrible morning, was won by every member of the phalanx. Only Dorian spears, clotting the earth of Plataea with the butchery of a blood sacrifice, could possibly have secured the victory, for only the men who grasped them had been steeled from birth to fight, to kill, and never to yield. Descending the arrow-darkened slope of no man's land, smashing into the enemy's front line, the Spartans faced a test for which their whole lives had been preparation. Other men, perhaps, shoving against an enemy as teeming, as celebrated, and as courageous as the Persians, would have found their spirits failing, their shield arms wearying, their bodies aching. But not the Spartans. Long though the battle appeared to hang in the balance, they did not cease to grind implacably forwards. No matter that the Persians, in their growing desperation, sought to impede their enemy's advance by taking hold of the Spartan spears and splintering them. Swords were not so easily snapped, nor the weight of bronze-clad bodies stopped. Still, Mardonius, as brave as any Persian on the field, sought to rally his troops. But by now the Spartans were closing in on the elite that formed his bodyguard, and Mardonius himself, resplendent on his white charger, made for an easy target. A Spartan, picking up a stone, flung it at him, and the missile smashed into the side of his skull, and down from his saddle tumbled the cousin of the great king, the man who had thought to be satrap of Greece. And the Persians, watching him fall, knew the battle lost. Mardonius's guardsmen, holding their ground heroically, were wiped out where they stood, but the remainder of the divisions, demoralized by the death of their charismatic general, began to run, and soon the rout was general over the battlefield. 40,000 men, led by a quick-thinking officer, managed to escape northwards onto the road to Thessaly, but most, stampeding in their panic, made for the fort, and the Lacedaemonians and Tegeans pursued them there. Soon enough, Pausanias was joined before the gates of the fort by the Athenians, whose bitter grudge match against the Thebans had ended with the Medizers breaking and fleeing for their city. Now, together at last, the victorious allies forced the palisade. The massacre that followed was almost total. Of the shattered remnants of Mardonius's army, barely 3,000 were spared. And so ended the enterprise of the great king against the West.